This is RSBNB Update, episode 358, recorded Saturday, April 28, 2012. The plushie appears. Hello, everybody, and thank you for listening to this RSBNB update. It's probably coming down the feed a little bit late to you, but that's because we decided to hold it back just a bit to see just exactly what was going to happen on RuneScape this Saturday. So I'm thinking we should start with that, but before we go there, we would like to say that this show was actually recorded live in front of the Mumble audience, so just because you know, we were all taking part in looking at what the community had to say about this and everything, and we just wanted to share it with everyone, so we decided to do a live show, which is a rare occurrence. And as you'll hear Trekkie's somebody around there swinging plates around in the background if they get mad at him. So
why is swinging plates?
It sounded like someone was like throwing plates, you know, like when someone gets mad and they use a dish plate as a frisbee. Yeah. Is that what the tinging noise is?
No.
Okay. What is that noise then?
That's Father in the kitchen.
Oh, okay.
He needs his afternoon coffee.
Oh, wow. Well, so even though the notes say we have a different order to follow, I'm going to say that we should start with what just happened in RuneScape. We saw it at Catherby.
Mm-hmm.
So, now you'll remember last week on the show, they said this was going to be something big, a preview of what's to come in the future. all it turned out in actually being was a preview of the portal for the RuneSpan, which is coming out next week. Were you let down by this?
Oh, yeah. I expected a little bit more. And all of a sudden, all we're doing is standing around watching orb glowing and wizards yelling and people spamming.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly the most
entertaining,
thrilling use of everyone's time. And, you know, you just have to wonder how many people Jagex managed to summon with this little countdown and everything. I mean, in my view, it wasn't even worthy of a countdown because it didn't seem as though it was that special. Like, I got more out of the dev blog and the behind-the-scenes pictures.
It didn't show anything. All it did was show you some essentlings and wizards
casting spells.
And
the little portal.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it's not like you gained anything substantial. So if you're in the type part of the world where it's 6 a.m. and you woke up just for that and this show, I feel incredibly sorry for you. Because, you know, it probably wasn't worth waking up that early for. But in any case, so the RuneSpan is coming and we got a bit of a preview of what it's going to be about. And suffice to say, the community was not impressed with it. There were people saying Jagex fails, it was one big trolling effort by Jagex. The whole gambit, really, from people just taking it in stride and saying, oh, that's what it was about, to people getting completely upset about whether or not something actually interesting happened. I think we fell in the happy middle because, you know, we're not too upset about this, but I think we were expecting more.
Well, the thing was, it didn't show anything. All it really showed was a portal, and we all kind of waited, and we all had higher hopes than what was
presented. I mean, the portal appears, and we're waiting, and nothing happens. Like, that's just not fair to us, but I digress.
We also had such high hopes, didn't we, Shane?
Yeah, what was your theory?
My theory was that free-to-play was going to get 1 weekend of membership. And the only way to get into member area was through a boat from the Grand Exchange to Cather Byr or Ardonia. Duke would have been very happy with that.
Yeah, so my theory on this was that we were going to see maybe some kind of future picture of what RuneScape was going to be like, and like some kind of guardian coming down from the future or something, telling us everything's going to be okay and all the bots are going to be removed, and you know that's going to be the future that we're all looking forward to.
Optimus failed.
Yeah, well, you know that we were expecting that to come out this week too, but as far as we know, nothing happened in the Optimus botting bot nuke.
Well, are you sure that there's a bot nuke coming?
Oh yeah, there is one coming. It's been in the works since the last one. They said they're ready to release it within a few weeks, back a couple of weeks ago. So I'm not sure what happened this week.
Maybe the bots found out their source and they're trying to figure out how to get rid of it or go around it.
Maybe. So anyways, on the same topic of RuneSpan, now that we're all completely disappointed, we can actually talk about the meat of the matter and what RuneSpan is going to be. On Friday, they put out a developer's blog showing the development process of RuneSpan and how it first started and how they eventually got to where they are now. And essentially, it's a kind of like a mini game, but not like the Great Orb Project in a way. It's designed to be a new way of training runecrafting, so I'm still hoping that this is not going to turn out like the Artisan's Workshop did last year for smithing. So I'm holding on to that hope. But they got early concepts of how things were going to work, how they got scrapped, why they got scrapped, and ultimately what the final designs are going to look like, which is what we saw today, including the S-Links.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get down to an interesting point of the developer blog, the balancing section. I'm going to read this paragraph because I think it's interesting and it shows what the whole idea behind RuneSpan is going to be. So, having to balance XP rates over a whole skill was no mean feat. We started with what we believed to be the best XP in game, the ZMI Altar. Then we looked at what kind of XP increase we wanted on top of that and smoothed out a few bumps in the XP curve to get our target XP rate. Once we had our target XP rates, we get to work on the mother of all spreadsheets. It's a simulation of all things in the RuneSpan that gives you XP. We set it up so that we can alter how much XP you get from successfully siphoning from a node or NPC, how often you get that XP, and how much time you spend on each activity. With the help of countless test runs by Mod Slayer and the balancer for this project, Mod Jenny, we managed to get the values that matched exactly what we were expecting on paper, ready to test it out once it was made. Once it was made, the QA department spent a huge amount of time playing on the RuneSpan, logging everything, how much XP they got per hour, how many points they got in an hour, and how it felt to play, what they spent their time doing, etc. Using this, we updated our spreadsheet with a more accurate model of the RuneSpan and got the XP rates we wanted. So, we know that RuneSpan is supposedly going to have a faster XP rate than the ZMI Altar.
Well, to be honest, not really saying much. As you and I both know, Shane, ZMI Altar isn't exactly the fastest either. It's really tedious and boring.
Yeah, well, same goes for any kind of conventional runecrafting, and ZMI is much faster than any of the Abyss training.
Yes, but you know, now you're really wondering how they're going to get rid of the grind that's been associated with runecrafting.
Well, I think this is a lesson from Dungeoneering.
Which part?
That's my guess. Well, just the fact that Dungeoneering is a nonlinear skill. And it seems like they want RuneSpan to be the same way, non-linear. Right? That kind of makes sense, I think.
Well, according to what they've said here about stamping out runes, it's a little bit of skill, a little bit of luck over what XP you get.
Yeah, and it's not linear, which is good, because that's where the term grind comes from, something that's not linear.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens when it comes out.
Yeah, so I have high hopes for this. The only area that gives concern is that if indeed you do need to work as a team, when you bring the rest of the RS community together, as we saw just in our little stint into Catherby with all the people around there, let's just say that the people in the RS community are not the brightest bunch when you put them all together. Mm. So, hence with the problem with Dungeoneering, too.
So it's going to be a group minigame.
Well, I think you're going to be able to do it solo, but I think you're going to need groups if you want to maximize your XP rates.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's my theory, at least. But all this and more will be answered next week, and, you know, we're probably wasting our time discussing this because we'll get some details wrong. Whereas okay, the only updates we really shouldn't discuss in advance are task sets because they're so simple.
All right. So anyway, back to Runespan about the islands. So they had a little diagram here. That's the best diagram I've ever seen. So anyway, from out of the RC guild, there's going to be three different layers. There'll be the free-to-play area, which is basically your basic elemental runes. Then you have your mid-level runes higher up. Assuming that will be for members of Nature, Laws, and Cosmics, I believe. Cosmics and Astro. Yep. And then you also have, after that, your high-level runes like Dev, Blood, and Soul runes. So we can actually make Soul runes now instead of in the ZMI altar. Mm-hmm. On each island, there will be resource nodes, and there will be living essences around. I don't know the point of those things yet, but we'll see when it comes out.
I mean, this is such a typical developer-type update, because this is exactly how you would represent something in a computer using what's called a graph. This is exactly like a graph data structure. I'm sorry, that was just a little side note. But anyways, continue.
And that's pretty much it. So basically, let's see. Well, there's two little games I think you're supposed to do. I don't know. I don't understand the second one. Maybe you can shed some light on it later. But the first one is...
I want to wait till it comes out.
Well, the first one is supposedly you put in runes and then you stamp it with something else. And that rune will have the one that you put in it and the one that you stamp with hopefully make something new. And it's a point system. So the more higher level up runes that you got stamped, the more experience you get, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And second one, I have no idea. Basically, you're supposed to break down the elemental properties of everything, and you're supposed to pull that runic energy out of the material, and to make runes. And that was it. That's all I can.
Yeah,
that
pretty much sounds like what we're gonna be doing. So.
But you know, it's a co-op rune run and it's a multiplayer rune run. So, might be in places where you can like get a guild together, get a RuneScape clan together, and just do something for the weekend.
Yeah, like that. That's good. Those kind of updates like that. I hope it works like that, and I hope it has a mechanic like that. But by no means do I think they should be forcing people to play with the RS community in general, because that just does not work, as evidenced by Dungeoneering. But anyway, speaking of Dungeoneering, Fremnex Sagas 2.
I did one of them earlier today.
Okay, and how
so,
was it?
It was okay. There was like one guy that was actually named Marmos, so I'm guessing that's where the or name came from. The good news is you can find these sagas in Abandon, the second levels of Abandon and Occult. And the good news is you can do this in C1 if you really want to get through it. I got mine doing C1 through the whole thing. But keep an eye out, because they're not exactly like in front of a door. You just have to make sure you see it before you leave that floor.
Okay. So they're not C2 required like the first batch was then?
No. First batch requires C2. This one requires C1 and above. And so basically anybody that goes in there will have a chance of getting it. You just have to want to get it. So anyway, you pick up the first one in the Abaddon level 2 is a string and tinder bundle. and you grab it, and then you get the story. So basically, in this story, you and your brother are in a dungeon, and you being the total brute ends up getting your brother hurt, and you're trying to figure out how to save him. And you're fighting all bunch of bosses throughout the level, throughout that little mission, dungeon floor, and you're trying to figure out how to save him, basically, and just killing everything. Think of it as hill giants going into dungeoneering with a giant sword, and that's basically it. Smash everything in sight.
All right. What about the other two? Any of those?
I couldn't get the other two. But basically, it's supposed to be a long story arc involving the two brothers. From what I can tell, is they're just going deeper and killing everything and trying to learn from each other.
All right. So the Dungeoneering sagas. You think this is a good way of advancing the Dungeoneering storyline?
Hey, it's a nice little thing to do on the side. It's not going to change anything, but hey, you know, you get some free tokens and a dungeon experience. Why not? You grab it.
What did you get for the one that you did?
I didn't complete the whole thing, but I can't remember what I got, actually. I cannot remember. I think I want to say I got 3,000 dungeon. I can't remember how many tokens.
All right. And for anybody who's wondering, there's two sagas this week, Thok Your Block Off and Natter. Let's see. The rewards for Thok Your Block Off. Max tokens, 1637. The Unabridged. Did you do Unabridged?
Yes, I did the Unabridged.
No, you get 105k strength XP and 53k Dungeoneering XP and 5344 tokens if you do the Abridged. And for Natter, you get 2674 max tokens and 21,000 Dungeoneering XP for Unabridged and 11,000 Thieving XP and 37,000 Attack XP for Unabridged, and for Abridged, you get 3,700 Dungeoneering XP. So, that's pretty much that, I think. The Unabridged one for Thok Your Block Off requires level 70 strength, so you will need that. Natter requires 35 Dungeoneering, Attack 60, and Thieving 45. So go enjoy Dungeoneering. All right.
Yeah. You can solo it too, just to grab a free experience. You just need to meet the requirements.
How long do they take? How long did this one take?
I died once because I didn't realize I had food in my inventory, but it was relatively short. I finished about 45 minutes.
Okay. Sounds good. So, tweaks and fixes for this week, not much to mention, aside from the fact that the Easter event has been removed from the game.
And someone lost.
Someone lost what?
Lost a bet at Jagex.
Oh, yeah. What's his face? I forget the name of the mod, but he lost his bet because the Chocotrice won, so he had to wear a bunny suit for an entire day from starting work at Jagex to finishing at the end of the day. So he went out in public and whatnot, and there is a nice video of this if you want to watch it on the Jagex YouTube channel.
And, you know, one other thing that's not noted in the tweaks and fixes was when I was doing the dungeon, I actually found that whenever I picked up a key, it actually gave me a little icon on the top left of what key we've gotten.
Oh.
So
in the regular dungeons too?
I would assume so if I could get it in there. So I got I would show all the pictures of all the keys on top left, and also show a text on the bottom that the party got whatever key, and then if you ever open a door, it will say that your party has opened so and so door, and you can pass through it. So this,
oh, that's good.
That's, so that was very useful. I'm going to do more dungeoneering now.
All right. Now, in general release notes, I really don't have anything to mention on this list unless you do, aside from the fact that client token failure has actually been reworded to the fact that you've been idle for too long and you need to reload the game client to play again. That's pretty much all I need to mention off this list. Do you have anything you want to mention?
No, not really here. Nothing here really needs to be mentioned anyway.
All right. Well, with that being said, another piece of the Squeal of Fortune update that they promised to us and they have since delivered on, Quest Earn Spins. So from this point forward, any quest you complete, you will be given 2 Squeal of Fortune spins. So they say even if you're an experienced connoisseur of quests, there's now more reason than ever to clear up the ones you've never got around to finishing, and perhaps to even aim for that quest point cape. And don't forget, while free players have access to 19 quests, becoming a RuneScape member opens up 160 more members-only quests, along with a wide range of other amazing content. So if you want to become a member, you want to get more spins, maybe that's something you want to think about.
And do you remember Wild May is coming?
Yeah, that'll probably be this Tuesday or something. And you know, this whole thing this weekend had nothing to do with that either, so that's too bad. But yeah. You have all your quests done, don't you?
I do, except for that mini new Taverly one, which I really don't feel like doing.
Well, let's just say that there's 181 quests in game, and people who have already done all these quests are unable to get their extra spins from this. So in a way, it's kind of the same thing as when you go train something, you know, like when, say, the Ecto thing came out for initially first grinding bones. You can't say you want to go back and get more XP from that. So in a way, I can kind of see it that way. But I mean, don't you feel kind of like shortchanged from this because you're not going to get 362 more spins?
No, not really. I think most of people who if you've done all the quests, I don't think you're worried about the spins at all, considering your best probably try and get the lamps anyway, unless you're really trying to get the super rare item. So yes, anybody who's looking for the lamps, you pretty much have all the high level skills anyway, if you did all the quests. So you won't care. It may help you with one or two skills, just a little less of a little, you know, one less inventory of fish, but it's not going to matter.
Okay. So that's how you feel on this?
Yeah, I don't think most of us would care. Do you care if you care about getting 300 more spins?
Yeah, I kind of wanted my 360 more spins.
Uh-huh. Are you going to hope that one out of 300 is going to end up being the rare item?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's like playing the lottery, Shane. Except worse.
I know. And exactly something I'm going to talk about later in the What Have We Been Doing section, something else that I did this week, but I'll leave that for later. But you are right. I would like my extra 362 spins because I just love playing Squeal of Fortune.
Then buy the 100 pack.
Yeah, and we'll get there shortly. So with that being said, time to move on now. But I want my 362 spins, Jagex. So if you could just send those to me, that would be great. And if you don't want to send them to me in a lump sum, why not just increase our spins based on how many quest points we have per day? I mean, that seems like a fair idea, doesn't it?
Oh. What I also think would be a better idea, if you know how there's 3 level of quests. There's the novice, intermediate, Master and Grandmaster.
Yeah.
And Grandmaster. Is that 3?
Mm-hmm.
No, 4, 3, depending
That's
on
4.
If you count. Well, anyway, I was thinking that if you're doing an office one, maybe you get 2 spins. If you do intermediate, you get 4. If you do a master quest, you get 6. And if you do a grandmaster, you get 10.
Yeah.
You know, something
or
where like.
Even if they could just give us spins for doing the grandmaster and Master Quest, because there aren't that many Grandmaster and Master Quests.
I'm just thinking, those who are going to for these quests anyway, these the ones, the upper ones, take a lot harder, are a lot harder to do. It would behoove them to give us spins that, you know, coincide with how long it takes us to do one of these things.
Mm-hmm. And just I want to point out a very glaring little paragraph here that just screams hypocrisy. For reasons related to the balance of the RuneScape economy, we are unable to retroactively offer spins for quests already completed. Keep an eye out for new quest content in the coming months, though. Yes, so what they're saying here is that Squeal of Fortune does have an impact on the economy in large numbers. When this came out earlier in the month, the ability to purchase spins? Oh no, no problem whatsoever with purchasing extra spins in the RS economy. We've done our math, and there's going to be very little trouble to the in-game economy. Right, so you're saying you can't give out 362 spins to someone who has finished all their original quests, but somebody can go out and buy 500 spins, or 450 spins, I mean, with a $100 package, and that's not going to affect the economy? Blatant example of hypocrisy here, folks. So let's just keep a note of this and store this in our JGX notebook for future examples of JGXian logic.
JGXian logic.
Yes. Yeah, that's where they say one thing one time, then they say something else, and then the two things come to totally different conclusions. Yes, and Uncle Dano in chat says that goes with JGXian morality. Right on there.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you more about JGXian morality later, everyone, so stay tuned for that. But I'm not too upset about the fact that I'm losing out on 362 spins. I think it could have been done better, maybe rather than granting them all retroactively. Just give us a few more per day or something like that, and, you know, it's just the way the ball bounces. But anyways, moving on. Players Gallery 34, bad jobs for NPCs.
Oh, what? So many bad jobs here. Many of them need a new career.
Yes. Like?
Fallout Dorian guards.
What about the bad hair day one? Or bad hair dye, I mean. Where guys like...
Which one?
He wants me to dye his hair green?
I don't know.
Fourth one, top row.
Dye green. What's he using anyway? That's the question.
I don't know. What would you use to make green hair dye?
Snail slime. But then again, if you do the more economical thing, you would probably use leaves, grind them up into paste or something like that.
And would that have enough potency to stick when you wash your hair?
You let it sit long enough. Besides, if you think about it.
We're back in the olden days where you don't wash your hair every day.
Yes, and also realize that there is no bathroom in RS at all.
That's just like on the Enterprise. You never see a bathroom.
Yeah, there's always a bathroom. You just never see a toilet. Which, if you think about it, they probably dematerialize it every time they need to go. I don't need to go. Just give me that transporter thingy.
And then it turns into boots. That one episode where they had that question from the school, and they asked what happens to that, and Trip thought he was going to be labeled as a sanitation engineer.
Yes. Poop, turn
anyways,
us to
I'm
shoes.
I'm sorry for the little distraction there, but just about things you don't see in RS and things you don't see on Star Trek. Interesting interesting little commonality.
Or Star Wars.
Okay.
All right, so we have...
There's another interesting one. How long will 99 ash sweeping take? That one's nice and detailed. I like that one. Actually, they're all pretty good this month. Most of them, at least.
Actually, there should be a
new
one.
Oh, the RuneScape plushie. Look at the bottom left, the RuneScape plushie. I should make a farming plushie and send that in.
Ew. I
have to go into my sister's craft supplies.
No.
Why? Make a little farming plushie, little Shane 12088 plushie with my lightning armor, my boots of lightness, my hat, and my farming cape.
Shane, you're not that artistic.
Oh, I could be if I wanted to be, like my Bob photo shoot. Anyways,
right.
So that's the players' gallery. I don't have anything else to say on this, so unless you do.
No, not really. I think, you know, instead of 99 Ash sweeping, they should have a 99 bank standing.
Yeah, that's true. So, anyways, that's our updates for the week. We're moving on to the focus of the month. And this focus is something that we initially recorded back in February. It was the first focus we recorded once we nailed the format down. Essentially, this is a focus that most everybody here should listen to. Most of you probably know this over time through osmosis, but we figured, we need to get this down because we need somewhere to go to where we can say somebody wants to learn how to get 99 farming. We need a focus on how to do 99 farming. So what we've got here is we've got a focus on farming with, you can probably guess who, with me and yours truly, Chief Snake. So this focus is on farming. We go through the basics all the way up to so you can get 99 farming. So enjoy. Alrighty, hello everyone, and thank you for being with us for this little sub-update that we like to call RSPNB Update Focus. So let's take a chance to remind everybody what Focus is. Focus is essentially a little sit-down between me and somebody important who knows something, or me and somebody else who can collaborate on something and shed some light on a certain issue of RuneScape. Essentially a 10 to 15, 20-minute little skill guide of something, or some other way of doing something in RuneScape that isn't necessarily the most common type of thing that people will have in their mind regarding a skill or a task or a minigame, at pretty much anything in RuneScape. So this week's RSPNB update focus is on farming, which is a topic very close to us at RSPNB Update. And yes, that is Chief Snake, who is here to discuss farming with me. And you know, it made sense because
couldn't contain myself.
We are farming. RSPNB Update's favorite skill is probably farming, so it makes sense for us to both be discussing farming here. So.
Does that still apply now?
Well,
it's a slightly biased, one-sided view, I mean.
Well, no, I mean, we've done enough farming education over all the past years that anybody who could go back could probably get what they're about to get in this RSPNB update focus in one thing, but I still peddle farming quite heavily.
Yes.
So.
I agree, by the way. Just I may be sort of trying to prove Shane wrong here, but I still agree.
That's good. So. We're going to basically give you a rundown of farming from level 1 all the way to 99, going through how you can level up from those very beginning levels to the levels where you can actually start getting insane XP, how you might level up, what we do during a farming run, and some little tricks that we've put together that help us through all these little farming runs. So let's just start off right now with farming. So I know I started farming the day it came out. I don't know when you started farming.
Ooh, definitely not the day it came out. I was not interested in it for a very long time because, like probably most people out there, I believed that it sucked, essentially, and it was really impossible to gain XP. I actually had no idea how to do it for a very long time. I mean, you probably were the person who introduced me to how to farm.
Yes.
Realistically, now that I remember that.
I have a screenshot saved somewhere of you at level 65 farming saying it's quite fun and you'll probably continue on for a long time. So
little did I know
Yes. So, when you first heard the notion of farming, did you feel that it was a skill that was absolutely hard to train? You had no idea how to train it. You had all kinds of misconceptions about it.
Story of my life.
So that's one thing that I think here is imperative that we address, is that farming is misunderstood when you haven't even started it yet. And even people who are doing it who are in their levels 40s, 50s, and 60s sometimes still do not understand the farming skill. So job number one is to make yourself understand farming before you put that first seed in the ground. So let's start with leveling up.
That's very deep.
At level one, to kind of give you an idea of how you might understand the skill. So essentially, all you need to do, it's a very simple skill compared to some things out there like dungeoneering and construction.
You know, I still feel like dungeoneering is probably what farming used to be to me right now. I mean, I leveled up dungeoneering just from lamps and things. If you're doing that with farming, then listen closely.
But exactly.
One day I'll understand dungeoneering.
So there's all these farming patches scattered throughout RuneScape. There's allotment patches, herb patches, flower patches, bush patches, tree patches, fruit tree patches, and a few other special patches scattered throughout, like, the, for instance, the fungi patch, the cactus patch, the calquit patch, the nightshade patch. So there's a whole huge selection of farming patches across the world of RuneScape. So essentially, the key to being a successful farmer is to go between each of these farming patches in a row and plant your seeds. It's not about standing still at one spot. So let's start with level one. So what was the first thing? Do you remember what you did when you first put that first seed in the ground?
I honestly had no idea what I was doing. I think it would be a little bit dangerous for me to try to answer that question.
Okay.
I don't want to advise anyone wrongly.
That's probably because you didn't understand what the skill was all about back then.
Yep.
So this can be said for most farming patches, the allotments especially. First thing that you need to do aside from clearing the patch is use some form of compost, whether it be super compost or regular compost. It's not that expensive, and it goes a long way to increasing yields and making sure the crop does not die. I think we both can agree that super compost is a must once you are an established farmer.
Yeah, it doesn't matter in the very beginning, obviously, but yeah.
Yes. So you'll have these seeds, and you'll want to just insert them into the ground at each farming patch and water them accordingly if they can be watered. It's worth noting that herb patches don't need to be watered, and the special patches, including bushes, don't need to be watered as well. Mm-hmm. After you do that, it's very imperative to move on to the next farming patch. So this might be the allotment, for example, that's somewhere else, and do the same thing there and the same thing there, and then keep moving on to all of the other allotment patches. And then if you have enough stops in your farming run, as it's to be called, the loop that you travel on, by the time you get back, hopefully your allotment crops should be finished and ready for harvest. I started doing this the second day that I did farming. Go ahead.
That's good. I don't know if you want to mention this later on or now, but it's probably more useful for this level 1 to 30. When you first begin and you're doing the allotments, because you probably won't do many allotments later on, you'll probably want to plant flowers, which will protect your crops. And it's a very good thing to know, or to realize, that your crops won't actually be protected if you plant the flowers at the same time as the rest of your crops, because your flowers won't actually have grown yet. They will only protect your crops if they are already fully grown. And you know, you can see which flowers protect which crops in the skill guide and stuff. You can look it up yourself.
That's a very good point, because
I never realized that in the beginning. I wondered why they didn't do anything, but it is a 100% protection rate when they are fully grown.
And I think most of the allotments early on do have something to protect them from.
Yeah. That's probably actually one of the main things to note, because, you know, I never realized this before. And if you have all of your flowers planted, you know, you might get less XP because you're not planting them every time, but your plants will never actually get diseased. And also, you don't need to water them, because when you water plants, it only protects them for one cycle of their growth, which is not that useful at all.
And that's also, and that's partially why we said when the Green Fingers aura came out that said, don't buy this, it's only useful for 20 minutes when you're using it during a farming run. And
that's good that
when
you,
it's running.
Yeah.
So that's the same kind of thing there.
I hope that was the right place, because I know we have a section later on for tricks of the trade and stuff. But
yeah, that's basic. So that's,
I think
that's good
you
to
really
put
probably
that
do
there.
Need to know this early on. Yeah.
Yes. So essentially, once you're moving around all these farming patches, you'll want to keep doing that with the best allotments that you can get. And that's the key. Do not stand elking at a farming patch. Even if you think you're going to lose something, do not do that. That is not a good way to farm, because you're just wasting your time when you could be putting more seeds in the ground.
Mm-hmm. And nowadays, you will actually get told by a farming ghost or something that that's a bad idea, won't you?
Yeah, that would be the one at Port Phasmades, I think, right?
Something like that. But I think I've even been told, like, I even had one pop up for me in Catherby once.
Oh, okay. Well, I've never stood around, so I guess I've never got a farming ghost.
No, I don't usually either. I can't even remember why that happened.
Okay. So you'll continue that all the way to level 30. And once you reach level 30, do you want to tell us what's significant about level 30, specifically why I highlighted 30?
Is that fruit trees?
Yes. And willows.
Oh, good. So we skipped oak trees.
Yeah.
Just saying. Personally, I would start doing oak trees as soon as you can.
Okay.
Because I just always, you know, I just struggled with understanding allotments. If that's you and you find farming is going too slowly, then you might want to try oak trees as well. But otherwise, and also acorns are cheap. You buy acorns
exactly.
And plant those. Yeah,
and
they're
also
really, really easy to get.
The reason I didn't put the oak trees in is because I guess this was in my mind when I did this. Like you said, I was an allotment farmer all the way up to level 60. And I had that within a week or so.
Oh, okay. But no, fruit trees are a good point to kind of start off from, I agree, because as soon as you get to them, we all know what happens with willow trees and above.
Yep.
I didn't get much further.
So willow trees and apple trees for the first fruit tree. Now, this is where a new type of farming run can come in that can be done once a day for the higher level trees, or twice a day if you're really on a good schedule like some people were during a certain skill of the month.
Are we talking about just the regular trees here? Or?
Yeah, the regular trees.
Regular trees. You can actually do up to 3 runs per day for willows. That's what I used to do. I used to be pretty dedicated once upon a time. I was in a good routine.
Yeah. So this is to highlight the other type of run that Chief just said here. The willow tree run combined with a few fruit trees thrown in that you can do a few times a day, providing you're on the ball enough with regards to time. If not, you can do it twice a day or even just once a day. It's still a nice boost with the allotments, and that'll get you very quickly to level 60.
Mm-hmm.
So, and once again, the same procedure here. except it's a bit different, except now you need the plant pot to put the seed into the pot, and of course you need to water it. I made this mistake when I first started doing trees, is that I did not water the plant pots, and I was wondering why they didn't grow, but you actually do need to water the plant pots, just in case anybody out there has made a mistake like that.
That's probably a very good point to make. I don't think I ever did anything like that, but yeah.
So, anyways, with that, it's just a matter of putting them in once again and coming back a few hours later. Twice a day or three times a day is definitely doable for the wood trees. I think once a day for the fruit trees, because those are on a significantly longer cycle. And because it's a good habit to get into, because later on you're going to be spending a huge amount of money if you decide to doing tree and fruit trees, that I suggest paying the gardeners to watch over your trees. That way then you don't need to worry about watering them or coming back to clip them if they get diseased or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, once again, the payments work the same way as allotment payments.
Yep.
And this is actually a undefined feature of the skill guide, but if you click on the icon of a tree, for example, or any kind of crop, it will tell you in the little text box down below what the protection is for that. It's not listed outright, so you do need to click on the icon to see that.
Yeah, that's right. I think anything from willow trees and above, you should pay the farmers for, in my mm-hmm. opinion. Sorry, did I just say willow? Maple trees and above, definitely. Willows, maybe. I can't remember what the payment for those is. Is it a basket of apples? If it is, then
that might sound about right, but a willow seed is only 945 GP, so you're not losing much.
Oh wow, that's even yeah, less than
so
it used to be.
I would only do it.
That's way less.
From
in that case, definitely just
the maples
and
are 35k each.
Yeah, wow, that's a really big gap now.
Yeah, yep.
Maples and above definitely pay the farmers, and it should also be noted something that I didn't work out until a lot later, like level 90 something. You don't, if you are paying the farmers, you don't need to super compost or compost your tree patches because it has no benefit.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, when this skill came out, Jagex wasn't exactly upfront with all of the farming lingo and everything about what exactly was going on the back end for this and how the skill worked. It was mainly trial and error with people learning what worked and what didn't. Mm-hmm. So we learned too as we went along. So anyways, once you reach level 60, I put this in as the marker at which allotments become too slow to
yep.
get fast level ups.
That sounds reasonable. Can I just add, what about herbs? When do you start doing herbs? When would be a good level?
Well, it depends on the market, actually. There's one herb in particular that's always going to be in demand, and it's relatively low level, too, and that's toad flax, I think somewhere mm-hmm. level 38, I believe. So once you reach level 38, you can offset some of these costs doing herb farming with toad flax, which is exactly the same thing as before. You can just fill these in with your allotment runs and
Yeah, definitely. If you're doing allotment runs, you might as well do herbs at the same time. Yep.
But it's also worth noting that if you are a lower level in herb lore, it might be worth it from level 1 all the way up to forever just to farm whatever herb you need in your farming runs for your herb lore training, because they add up over time. And if you do 5 herb runs a day at an average of 7 per allotment, so that's 28 herbs per, assuming you're just doing 4 herb patches and you do 5 of those a day, that's a decent amount of herbs.
It is, yeah. We can talk about how much it'll offset the costs
yeah.
by later, I suppose.
Yeah.
But,
so anyways, but I was just level thinking, 60
in terms
plus,
of XP, it would be a little bonus.
Level 60 plus. That's the skill when, that's the time when I say it's time to just do trees and fruit trees only, with watermelons thrown in if you're in a skill of the month competition for extra XP.
Yep.
That's That's actually when farming gets really simple. Because
it's really true, yeah.
Because everything else is too slow to benefit, so you just do these trees 2 or 3 times a day, the wood trees, and herb trees once a day, and you're good.
I actually never understood how anyone sort of did allotment runs at all. Especially once they got past, you know, level 50, 60, because trees, they're really, really fast.
Yeah. And we'll get to this point later, but it's a matter of patience determining how far you want to go in, but that's later. Anyways, so now you know what to plant when you're leveling up. Let's talk about where to get some of these seeds. Levels 1 to 30. The seeds are really cheap.
Oh, yeah, true.
Use the Grand Exchange. Pickpocket them. Get free seeds from your friends.
I mean, for allotment seeds, you're probably better off just using the GE if you can't be bothered, you know, getting thieving XP from pickpocketing them.
Yeah.
Because they're so easy to get. They're so cheap.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I put the pickpocketing in is because there's two NPCs that are actually geared completely towards stealing farming seeds, and that's how Jagex put the initial stock of seeds in the game. So it's just something that it was always a way, you know, oh, farming's coming out, let's go pickpocket these things. Actually, on episode 1 of RSB&B update, we discussed the seeds and farming equipment update.
Seriously, was it that long ago? Wow.
Yeah, I remember that clearly. So, anyways.
Yeah, I remember that time, though. It was kind of like, oh, how much are these going to be worth? What's the seed?
And also back then, just a bit of farming trivia, you did not know what herb seeds you had in your inventory. That wasn't until a significant time later.
Yep.
It was a mystery of what herb you were going to get until you actually picked the herb. Mm-hmm. So, level 30 to 60, the seeds are still moderately cheap. Use the Grand Exchange. Use the Kingdom. And once again, ask friends. Friends are always good for this, because if you have any friends who use the Kingdom, they're going to have an excess of lower level seeds that you can use. And most times, if they're nice to you, they'll just give them away for free. So that's a good thing to do.
Yep.
I know I've given people away seeds lots because I want to spread the joy of farming around the world.
Yes, you're a good person, Shane. I think with the costs of seeds, it's interesting to note that willow seeds are cheap. Willow, as you said before, they're like 1k each. And then it jumps up massively to the next stage, which is maples, which, you know, are 35k or whatever each. And that is why I did willows all the way up to level 90-something, because I was a cheapo. And it is similar with fruit trees, because I'm pretty sure curry tree seeds are the one before pineapple tree seeds. And there's a mess. I can't remember. I don't know what the price is off the top of my head. But there is a big gap.
GP.
For curry? Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's nothing. And then pineapples.
Whereas pineapples, 13.5k.
Yeah, still. Big gap. I did willow trees and pineapple trees until 90-something, and I think I did pineapple trees almost all of the way, but after that I jumped up to maples, and at some point, yeah, anyway, you get the idea. I was lazy. Yeah. I was cheap.
And once again, level 60 plus, past that range, things start to get really expensive for seeds.
Really expensive. So, if you actually want to spend that much, use the good seeds.
So it's a matter of whether you want to go slow like Chief did and do the willows and what'd you do for pineapple? Willow, pineapple?
Yeah, yep. Almost all the way.
Yeah.
And then switch to maple, pineapple. Near the end, I know I was getting a bit more liberal with my money, so I kind of bought, you know, some papayas and things and spread those around. It makes a little bit of a difference, but it depends. Yeah, but see what works best for you.
What I did for my whole range from going from when I stopped doing the allotments at level 60 to the end is, well, not the end, to around level 80, 85 or so, I just used the Miscellanea Kingdom, and that took a while, but it was cheap.
Yeah.
Because if you set your kingdom to wood, you get all kinds of seeds, magic, yew, spirit, calquit, maple, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So, once again, it depends how much money you have.
Yeah, I've always been the kind of person who would just sell the seeds from the kingdom and then buy cheaper ones.
Well, that works too. Anyways, I think that pretty much covers all the leveling up regarding this. And, you know, in the episode topic for this, if you do have any questions regarding any of the stuff in here, just post those in here and I will attempt to answer them. Or if for some reason Chief's browsing, he can answer them. But
unlikely.
I just want to talk a bit about what you can do during a farming run to make things a little bit more profitable before we give some of our own little pointers, since we have actually filled the entire time block plus some. But that's okay. It's farming. We like that. Okay, so must-haves during a farming run. I think we both agree that you want the magic signatures, right?
Yes. Yep. At least for herb runs.
Inform what they're about.
Basically, what magic signatures do is they increase your yield. So you get more stuff from everything, from your allotments and from herbs. Mainly is what you want them for, because you will make a lot more money, heaps more money probably, off herb runs. The magic signatures come from the fairy tale part one quest.
Yes,
I think. Yes, good. And That's a pretty easy quest, so you might as well do it.
Mm-hmm.
From memory.
Part two was the fairy rings, and part three was...
Which is also good, but I didn't do that for quite some time. Oh, yeah, which is handy, but not really necessary.
Yeah. The magic
I suppose the magic watering can is really good for watering your saplings and things. I mean, I was pretty kind of dedicated to my farming, so I had a whole tab dedicated to, you know, the farming equipment and stuff. And I, you know, I used to go and fill up hundreds of watering cans at one time from a sink or something, you know, just because I had spare time on my hands like that. And yeah, but whereas nowadays you don't need to bother doing that. If you're lazy, or more specifically someone who isn't that interested in farming, then make sure you get yourself a magic watering can, because then you don't have to bother doing all of that preparation beforehand. You just bam, do your farming.
Yep.
It's handy.
And also, there's one thing you could do also if you're interested in getting more from the herb yields, but it involves doing herblore habitat. That's the juju farming potion. I personally don't see the need for that, because I have other things I'd rather be doing than doing that mini game to get these farming potions that'll increase the yield. But, you know, once again, it's entirely up to you. If you have time for this, go for it. There's no reason not to if you have the time.
Yeah, pretty much. Shane only just told me what those were before this, so that's how useful they are.
Yeah, I would really recommend them if you are if you're doing a herb that is very expensive, so Torstol or something like that, and you really, really want to get as much as you can out of the herb yield.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Anyways, those are the few things you might want to have with you on the farming run. I don't know if there's anything else that's really a requirement aside from teleport runes to get where you're going. I know you used to use a spirit terror bird. Do you want to say why?
I used to, but that was only because they used to be a lot more useful before the agility update. Which meant that you could run longer distances more easily. So now I don't need a Spirit Terror Bird at all, but I wear agile equipment, so I weigh nothing. So, you know, if you've got a low agility level, then you want to use a Spirit Tear Bird or a Bull Ant, I suppose, if you can. Because they will, yeah, if you have scrolls for those, then they will replenish your run energy. It's been a long time since I've used them, so I'm forgetting. But yeah, they used to be really, really useful. And if you have a low agility level, then they still will be. Or if you don't have weight reducing equipment.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, definitely consider that if you've got the summoning level for it. And does a bull ant do the same thing?
I don't know. I've never actually looked into what a bull ant does.
They do something similar, don't they? I don't know. Hmm. But a Spirit Terror Bird is the main thing. If you can use one, then you probably should.
Apparently, it can store 9 items and restores running energy based on your agility level. So, yes, it's like a Spirit Terror Bird light.
Yeah, they also used to be useful for storing items as well, but you don't need that anymore either, because if you ever need to, you can just... Oh yeah, that's something we didn't mention, actually. You can note your items by using them on the tool leprechauns.
Yep. And yeah, notes also work the other way, so that you can offer payments in the form of a note as well.
Yes, that was something I did not realize for a long time. Yep, very good point.
Yep, so I think that pretty much covers the farming run that you're going to be going on right after you're listening to this out there. So let's just talk a bit about us now. I have about 38.8 million farming experience on the way to 40 million, and you have something like 29.2, I think. Around there.
Your guess is as good as mine. Yeah, something like that. I know it's 29-ish.
So he's got 99 farming twice. I've got 99 farming almost 3 times. So safe to say we're pretty much dedicated to this, and I still like to farm whenever I can. Given that, and I know Chief is going for 30 million whenever he gets there.
Slowly, slowly.
So,
even
with that, let's just say that patience is a virtue.
It is. And that's because some of us...
Because you can get 99 like he did, or you can get 99 like I did. Whereas his 99 was nice, slow, leisurely, you know, willows, pineapples all the way to the 90s.
Eight months.
There you go. And, you know, that was perfect timing. I think you got about a year after I did.
Yeah, that was from level 70, by the way. 8 months from level 70.
Yeah, and still, that's close enough to the beginning, because you can get level 50 in a week, level 60 probably in 2 weeks. So 9 months, we're talking. So the same amount of time it takes to have a baby, you can have 99 farming.
Why have a baby when you can get 99 farming? It's brilliant.
So
you could even do both at the same time.
Oh, that's great. So, or you can go quick. I started at the beginning of or middle of August, I think, fundraising. I was level 85. By the end of September, I had level 99 through just fundraising through clues and whatnot. And this was doing one farming run a day of maples, palm trees, or not maples, magics, palm trees, and calquits, which were super expensive back then, and is even more expensive now. So I don't recommend that. But it's the method to just... It's just the method that steamrolls everything and is what you want to do if you're in a competition and you have the money. But, you know, farming is a skill that's to be enjoyed, so I would do it differently now than I did it back then. Actually, I would probably go with something a little bit faster than your method, but not as crazy as my method. So.
Yeah, that's true, though. No, I remember doing that for the skill of the month, the very first farming skill of the month. I think I got 5 million XP in that 1 month, which was quite a contrast to the, you know, the 9 months that it took me to get 99, however many million XP that was. But that was using everything I could, throwing everything I could at it. Magic's palms, and then every other run in between.
Yeah.
Expensive? Probably not worth it.
So once again, it depends whether or not you're patient enough and whether you have the resources, but whichever you feel, you might as well do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have one more thing to say, me personally, before we wrap this up, and it's something that I still do often, and that's figuring out which herb is best to net profit so I can fund any other little addictions I have in RuneScape. So here's a good little formula. I put together a basket first off on the Grand Exchange portfolio here of toad flax, maples, and pineapples. But of course, like Chief said, you could change this up to willows and pineapples and make even more profit. But essentially, what you need to do is take the herb price that the portfolio says, multiply it by 7 because that's the average, times 5, assuming you're doing all 5 herb patches, minus the 5 herb seeds, and that'll be your profit per run. So that's just real profit that you get from the herb farming. Then you can multiply that by however many herb runs you want to do a day, so say 3 or 2, and that's a huge amount of money, and it is enough at the time of recording this to cover a full maple run and pineapple run, one of each per day, just by doing 2.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty impressive, covering full maples and pineapples, because when I used to do it, you know, I just used to aim to cover my costs with willows and pineapples, and that would have been significantly cheaper. So, yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, so that's the key to farming and offsetting costs, is to just watch the prices of the herb market and go for a herb that is, of course, useful. So, Felstock if you're high level, toad flax otherwise, and then just check whatever other herb seeds you get from Slayer. You might as well do those and see if you can sell them for anything, because they're profit, right? So, That's just something that really needs to be stated here as a little bit of an advanced trick calculating this. That's all I have to say on farming. Do you have any other thing that you want to mention in terms of farming here before we pass this back off to the regular show?
Not much else in particular, just, I suppose, the regular spiel. We've got farming videos on the RSBNB Update YouTube channel, which are pretty old now, and I hate my voice on them. They need to be redone. But if you're beginning at farming trees, or trees and fruit trees, or bushes, or what else did I do? Herbs, then they will be useful to you to watch for just, you know, a basic farming run. They will get you started. They're really old, so they don't have all of the current techniques, but they will teach you all of the basic tricks, and you'll learn later the, you know, it's just natural.
Yeah.
It'll sink.
Essentially, the videos are the whole level 60, level 30 to 60, and 60 plus segment that we just mentioned here.
Mm-hmm.
So, they are old, but they still work. I don't know what you think the problem is with your voice in that, but sounds perfectly fine to me. But
it's when I used to be a lot less confident as a speaker.
Okay,
it's
all right.
It's been a while since I listened to him too. So still, maybe I'll redo them for you. Maybe I'll get that motivated. We'll see. We'll see. You'll see.
We'll see. YouTube channel. But anyways. So that's how to farm. A bit of an addendum onto those YouTube videos, but watch those YouTube videos anyways, and we'll pass it back to the regular show now for what's left of it. So thank you, Chief. That was very entertaining.
It was my pleasure, Shane. See you later, guys.
All right, so that's our RSBNB Update Focus Farming. Hope you all enjoyed that. Let us move on to questions now.
Yay, questions!
You want to read the first one?
This question is from Marking22. I am level 50 in Dungeoneering, but I have gained those levels through Tears of Guthix and XP Lamps. I was wondering if you could give me some tips on Dungeoneering and what are some good ways to raising it. Get a good group. That's basically it.
Yeah, Dungeoneering becomes so easy if you've got a competent group to go with.
Basically now, let's see, you're level 50, so I'm not expecting much from the people around that level. You just have to make sure that if you're in a room and if you're in with a group and then you're in the floor, you have to make sure that people are actually going in different directions. So basically make sure like one person goes northwest, one person goes southwest, and try to go as far as they can and make sure they gate it. Basically what happens is
Trekkie means by gate is if you come across something that might be useful later, like a food spot or a resource. We used to do this with keys, but you don't need to do that anymore because if you have keys, you just use the key ring now. But you just create a gate stone using the create gate stone spell and leave your gate stone there.
So you make your own personal gate stone, and you drop it at wherever, you know, key locations. Like there's a door with no keys yet, but at least someone can go open it later on. So that's basically try not to die. And if you have a lot of food, do try and share it out, because if one person dies, it really does affect the whole thing, because then you have to wait for the person to respawn and try and make their way back. And if you guys don't have the group gate stone around that area, they may have to go through an entire mob of enemies, and that just makes them less combat effective when they get to you. Basically, one of the best ways to do dungeoneering is really just get a good group and know what to do. There are a bunch of dungeoning clans around. You can always try and look those up and try and join them once in a while. Most of them know what they're doing. Keyword is most. And, yeah, that's more or less it. And, you know, marketing, don't worry. I got level 50 dungeoneering by doing Tears of Guthix for months. So you're not alone in that regard.
Yeah. Another question that I was thinking about pondering this when I was putting this in. Couldn't someone just use lamps and whatnot for the lower levels? And then once they get into, say, floor 30 plus, take those lamps and then just rush complexity 1 small dungeons all the way up to, say, level 30. And then after actually start doing it just to open up all the floors, because, you know, you can level it up with just lamps, but you don't unlock the floors, so you still need to rush them at complexity 1.
That is actually what I did with the Tears of Guthix. I just did Tears of Guthix until I got to level 15 dungeoneering. Then I just, I did C6 at the time, because we don't know how to dungeon well at the time anyway. I just C6 every with you and Mike from level 1 all the way to whatever... high as I could go. And basically at level 50 you get all the way, you unlock level 20, floor 25, no, floor 24, and by the time you get to floor 24 you probably unlock to maybe 26 or 30 depending on
which experience you get, right?
So I use Tears of Guthix, so I got to level 50. You're not alone, don't worry about that.
One more thing before we move on here. When you're dungeoneering, what you want to do is you want to go through all your floors that you can go through at the current time. So as we said, rush complexity 1 up until the XP rates start getting decent, then switch to complexity 6, and then complete all the floors that you can complete. And then once you complete all those, you'll want to reset your progress so that you can start again rushing at number 1. And that's typically the best way of getting XP, because if you don't reset, you get what's the multiplier, like half the XP?
Not even half.
Okay.
It's like a very, very small fraction of what you would get.
All right. Thank you, Marky. Question next is from Lord Fast Wesley. Dear Shane, and insert name here. I have... Yeah, how do you like being called? Insert name here.
Normal.
I have 45 Dungeoneering and 2.5k tokens. How long would it take to get... from 45 to level 80 and 2.5k tokens to 200k tokens. Another dungeoneering question for you, Trekkie.
I have no idea how long it would take. Not a clue how long it would take, but by the time you get to level 80, you should have more or less, I think you should have 200k tokens anyway. So
yeah,
by the time you get to level 80, you'll have that, and so you don't have to worry about it. But how long it will take, I don't know.
Just don't spend tokens on things that you don't need along the way. That's the best way to play.
Rule number one is always, unless you're going for the rapier or something specific, always get those scrolls. Those scrolls will help you with everything else in the game. Herb lore scrolls are the best. I save so much money doing that.
Another thing you might want to pick up along the way is the Bone Crusher.
Yeah.
But, you know, that just takes away from the amount of time you need to get a rapier, so it's up to you what you do with that. But, yeah, typically if you just go on, you'll get the points as you go. As for time, it shouldn't take too long. I think Dungeoneering was maxed to level 99 in less than a month. So if you really are diehard about it, less than a month for sure. And it really starts getting fast around the mid-level 70s or so. Like 30k plus per floor. Mm-hmm. If you have a decent team, that is. So once again, from the previous question, decent team.
And also remember, there is a term called leechers where you pay somebody a couple million dollars and you'll get full XP out of every run.
Yeah, you know, I'm still out on that, whether that's safe or not, because, you know, it is a trust trade and everything, so I don't know if you'd want to put your money into that.
Well, as I said, it's up to each one, so they do what they want to do.
Yep. All right, next one. Also, what's with these recent updates, what are your views on the choices that Jagex has made overall? So essentially, how is Jagex doing? Let's give them a rating. A, B, C, D, or F?
D.
Okay.
I'm just not liking all the squeal updates they're doing. It's getting ridiculous when they're trying to eke out more dollars off of everybody, and you're still not guaranteed to get anything decent out of it.
Okay.
And
I'm going to go with a C on this because, as you said, I haven't been lately impressed with, for instance, the most recent change to the Squeal of Fortune. Not the quest one, but the one I'll get to later with the purchasing of the larger spin packages. And, you know, it just seems like it's been a recurring problem through 2012, 2011, and 2010 is that updates don't have the amount of sticking power that they used to have back in the old days of 2005, 6, 7. I mean, if you look back at those days, those were the updates that defined the game. So, I hope the RuneSpan update will be an update like this on Monday. And overall, I mean, we just had to deal with the bots and everything. And, you know, that is the reason I give them a C rather than a D, like you said, Trekkie. They dealt with the bots the first time, and, you know, it seemed as though we were headed on the right path after that. So, and then, as you said, just kind of, it's like kind of just plateaued and stayed flat after that. It hasn't shot up aside from maybe the graphics updates and whatnot. So,
yeah, but
that's what I need to see in my book.
Well, they said with recent updates, and you know, in as I remember it, the first bot nuke isn't as recent anymore.
Yeah, well, that was back in October, so it's almost 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you. Thanks again, your friendly neighborhood Lord Fast Wesley. All right, next question.
All right, this is from Mormomska. Hi, dude. All right, dear host, Mormomska here. Last night I was having some potato mash and putting cream milk and butter, just the French people do, hon, hon, hon. And this question came to my mind. How does the Shay1208 household do mash as you are lactose intolerant? Okay, you cannot say that 10 times fast. Also, another cuisine.
Yeah.
All right, say that first. I'll let you answer that one first.
Okay. Well, what we only have mashed potatoes, I think.
Mashed taters.
A few times a year. Easter, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. And what we do is we do a combination of just a teensy-weensy bit of skim milk and the rest margarine. So that's what we use to mash our potatoes. We don't do the whole sour cream and huge amount of cream pasty potato stuff. That's just ew when you have potatoes that are paste.
Hey, you know what? We could do ask Uncle Dano for his recipe for mashed taters.
He has a recipe for mashed potatoes?
Probably. He is an uncle. He has his job to make mashed taters during special occasions.
I don't know about that, Trekkie. Just because someone's an uncle doesn't mean they know how to cook mashed potatoes. And yes, it's his pumpkin pie recipe, he says in chat, not mashed potatoes.
Pumpkin pie. That's so Halloween.
Oh, pumpkin pie is good.
Yeah. And okay, so second part of the question, also another cuisine-related question. RS seems to be very unhealthy in terms of food you can make and eat. And why is that there is no pork products? I can clearly see piggies in Drainer Village and cannot have it for dinner. And also, when using high lighting details, it seemed really dark and pixelated, but when you use low using Mac B Pro with Intel graphics chip, it's fine. See, Uncle Dana can make mashed taters. Okay. All right, okay. So unhealthy food. Let's see. Oh, wait. Actually, it said very healthy food.
Well,
my bad.
Well, for one thing, the reason why...
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say why it seems unhealthy. I actually think it is unhealthy when you look at things. And I was going to say it's because it's back in the olden days. And back in the olden days, they knew nothing about what was healthy or what was not healthy. So...
Well, back in the days, you needed more calories. I mean, you think about it, in RS, we're going around fighting monsters. You need a high caloric food and high carbohydrates.
And,
but
you know, also way back then, being big and wide and whatnot was a status symbol.
Yes, you were considered rich and beautiful if you were a fat little pig. Key in point, look at the kings of England.
Exactly. So, yeah, and why no pork products? That's interesting. Why can't you kill pigs?
Not to offend other people. But they can kill cows, so I don't know. Let's see, because pork is, well, in the game, pork is a very, very rare animal, and killing those, it's really bad because they're endangered species. As he said, you can only find them in Drainer Village. You can find cows all over the map. And so, therefore, okay. Pork... Pigs are in endangered species, and so are sheep.
Yeah, so and you know, pigs aren't used for dual functions. You know, like cows are used for their feathers, their eggs, and their milk. I mean,
cows are used for their feathers.
I mean, cows are used for their meat and milk. I somehow got what chickens are used in there for too. But I mean, cows are just used for milk and beef
and leather.
Chickens are used for their feathers, their eggs, and their meat. So, I mean, you're right in that the pigs that are there should actually be used as pork. So, anyways.
And you take high lighting detail thingy.
I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure what the question is regarding this because there's no question mark. I don't know whether that's the issue or if you're happy with that or... What?
Well, he's right there. Just ask the damn guy.
Well, Marapska, tell me, what this is. I mean, I don't get what the question is here. Come on, type quick. It goes dark somehow. This is what we get from doing a live show. So it goes dark, but when using low lighting detail, it's fine. And it's Intel integrated graphics. Okay. So what that tells me is that maybe if there's an issue with the way the Intel graphics chip handles lighting on RuneScape or something, that would be my only thing. Because, you know, it is Intel integrated graphics. And they say they're decent graphics, but, you know, if that's the case, then... Anyways, I hope that answers it. Maremska, if you have a microphone, I could unmute you and you could tell me exactly what this is about. All right, I'm unmuting you now.
Wait, let me turn down my sound.
Yeah, I don't, Trekkie, you won't be able to hear him. We're not set up for this both ways. I will be able to hear him, and I will do my best. All right, tell me what the issue is. Okay, and this is on a MacBook Pro, you said, with Intel graphics, yes? Yeah, it's basically what I said there previously. It's an Intel integrated graphics chip. You're not going to be expecting miracles out of it, and chances are is that the part of the graphics drivers that actually handle lighting, they're not going to be able to handle what the game is demanding of it in terms of lighting, as well as the different graphics card would. So if you turn the lighting details down, you said, it will just go to the default fallback, which is just a more general overlay kind of light rather than specific highlighting on each thing. So, and, you know, I don't think there's any way you can fix that. I mean, you'd need a different computer to fix it. And I'm sure that after you buy a MacBook Pro, you don't want to invest on a different computer just to play RuneScape. I think that's what you would end up doing. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Marabska. That's an interesting way of doing these questions. We might have to work out a way for Trekkie to hear him in the future, because Trekkie just sounds like I'm talking to myself right now.
No, I heard him loud and clear.
Oh, you did?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, anyways. Yeah, he's making fun of you, Trekkie, right now. So,
anyways. Don't forget who has ban abilities.
All right, moving on to the next question now. thank you, Marumska. All right, so next one from your favorite person, Trekkie. You can read it.
Okay, this is from Duke Juker. Hello, Shane. Hello, Shane and J1, J2, J3. I have three excellent and original questions. First, do you guys think there are any areas of RuneScape not currently available to free-to-play players that should be made available for whatever reason? Free-to-play players always love more content. So let's go with that one first. What do you think, Shane?
This is exactly what you were talking about with the river.
Exactly.
See, you and Duke are more alike than you like to admit.
Yeah. But, you know, just, I think, I think they should give free-to-play one weekend just to take a look at our members.
Yeah, like a weekend trial of members or something?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be the best way to do it. Because you can't exactly make parts of members, or parts of free-to-play members, or vice versa. I mean, you can't make parts of the members' world free-to-play because, you know, it's just, there's just too many dependents on it. So.
But, you know, I would say let them go into Taverly and maybe that little Taverly dungeon just to take a look. You know, let them fight some dragons and take a look at Taverly area and see all the trolls and everything else. I mean, the whole point of Taverly is so that people who just come into members for the very first time have an idea of what to do. So why don't you just, you know, open the door for them for a little bit? They can't cross the mountain. That's a big no-no. Hey, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I guess that would work. I'm just trying to think if there's any other dependencies that would get broken by that.
Well, they can't do any of the member skills. It's just really just take a look at the area. Go down a dungeon and kill.
I think for the amount of time it would take to implement something like this, it would just be better to give them a trial of members for one weekend.
Mm-hmm. Give them a trial for one weekend, right? So basically, make it a special thing for free to play.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, second question. What one skill needs to be updated or improved the most? Skill can always use improvement, but which one needs it the most and is what I want to know. I think you and I are going to say this really, really fast, have the same thing.
Okay, shall we go in 3, 2, 1 and see what we both say?
Okay, 3, 2, 1.
All right.
Runecrafting.
3, 2, oh.
You're late, Shane.
Yeah, I was going to say smithing.
Close enough.
Well, RuneCrafting is getting an update this week, so let's wait and hold judgment on that. Your argument is not valid this week, so which other skill?
All right. I go with prayer.
Prayer?
I like some new ways. Yeah, I would like some new ways to get prayer, except burying bones and altar and the ecto thingy. I'm not a very religious person, so I don't spend a lot of time praying to the dead.
Okay. Two of our people in our chat, Uncle Dano and Adiv, both say construction.
Well, I don't know what to say about that one. So maybe they can make a thread and say what they want.
I think the way they're going with construction is they want to say that construction needs more rooms and construction basically needs an update. The house needs an update because the house really has an update since construction first came out, except for a few rooms added here and there. I'm guessing that might be the thing that these two want with construction. But my thing with regards to smithing is that smithing is the same as it's been since RS2 came out. Smithing is a useless skill. I mean, sure, you can get 99 smithing and it's nice and everything, but what use is 99 smithing these days? You don't need to make rune plate bodies.
Make bars.
Compare 99 Herblore with 99 smithing. At 99 Herblore, you have the prayer renewal potions and the overload potions and all the other extreme potions, which are heaps more useful than anything that currently exists in the smithing skill.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to see an update to smithing. Make it more useful. Make it go to level 120. Balance out the current table and wipe everything back so that around level 60-ish you can make rune and save level 60 plus to 120 all the new interesting things. Like, for instance, you need to make this good armor based on a certain drop you get at the God Wars, a certain wood that you chop or something, or some certain thing that you mine. And the piece is not tradable, the ore is not tradable, and you need to make this on your own, much the same way that potion flasks are not tradable. I mean, that potion flasks same way overload potions and whatnot are not tradable. I was thinking of putting those in flasks, but of course potion flasks are tradable. I was just referring to the way overload and extreme potions work. So that's my vision for smithing. Same goes for crafting, because, Trekkie, you have 99 crafting. What do you use it for aside from making glory amulets?
Nothing, really.
Exactly. So all those old skills, in my view, need to be reworked.
Okay, this kind of goes with what you said goes with the last thing he said is, should members be able to smith dragon items, especially if dragon raises the max level from skill to 120? Seems like a good idea, in which you just answered that anyway.
Well, I said yes if they go to 120, but I don't think dragon should be smithable because dragon has never been the smithable type of armor, and it doesn't make sense that it should be the smithable type of armor. They should say
also
for other
realize
types of armor.
Also realize now, dragon armor is not the best as it used to be. Back then, it was the best armor you can get. Now you have three whole sets are better than full dragon.
Yeah,
but then it will also cause a price crash because dragon full helm is a very expensive helmet, and so is the pickaxe.
Yeah, that's true. But the pickaxe is at least useful. So is the hatchet. But anyways, thank you, Duke Juker, for those questions. All right, last question now from Ring. Also, Shane, do you think bullying has been used as an excuse for the unnecessary erosion of rights and a right to censor? Also, what do you think of the Thinspoke controversy relating to Instagram and Facebook? I'm not aware of any cases where somebody has said that bullying is leading to excess censorship. Are you? But I don't get what it means by unnecessary erosion of rights. Like,
I think they're. I think he's also touching on the. There's a new bill that's going around that's supposed to try and prevent cyberbullying or not cyberbullying, cyber attacks. I think that has a little bit to do with it, but that's just my thoughts on it. So, yeah. And as for his secondary question about Instagram and Facebook, I really don't care. Facebook is evil anyway.
Right on. I completely agree with you there. I completely agree there.
Those who want to take fancy pictures and make them all color shaded and everything else, go right ahead. Make it a hobby. Get you out of the house. You know, be happy to get out of it. Be able to get out of the house on your own.
Yeah, and you know, I've said this before. The whole Instagram thing doesn't make sense to me because if I want to take a picture, I want to take a picture and have this be as high quality as I want it to be. I don't want to put some filter on it that makes it look like I took it with a Polaroid. If I wanted to use that, I'd use a Polaroid camera. So let me just have my plain old pictures as they are. Anyways, but you're going to have to provide us more information on that ring regarding bullying because I'm not very much aware. And, you know, Trekkie said he's aware of a whole censorship bill, but that's online. So I don't know exactly what you're referring to here. Anyways, so that's it for questions this week. Thank you, everybody, for submitting your questions. And as a reminder, I'd like to say that we do need those audio questions. So audio questions can be sent to questions@rsbnb.com. That's where you send them. Make sure you have a file attached, because if not, well, they get deleted, because that's exactly what the questions email box is for. Or if you don't want to email them in, you can phone them into 571-572-2632, which is a U.S. number. So if you're not in the U.S., you might incur some kind of fee, but we're not responsible for that. Or lastly, you can leave us a voicemail on Skype. Just add the username rsbnbupdate. That's how to send questions in. All right. Mm-hmm. Tech news.
All right. First things first. Valve confirms Steam and Steam is source for Linux.
You know, this was bound to happen eventually, I think. Because if you think about it, it already came to OS X, so they might as well port it to Linux. It's not that different, and they also say they're having some they're not too impressed. Well, they're planning for failure with Windows 8. They say Windows 8 might actually be bad enough for Linux to step in and take over the desktop PC reins. So, you know, I personally don't agree with that. I think Windows 8 is on the right track. But we'll see what the general population thinks. But nonetheless, it's good that Valve is bringing gaming to Linux, because when they initially brought Steam to OS X, it basically opened up the Mac as a potential for gaming, because they're saying, developers, you can deploy your game on Steam and have it available to Mac users. So it's going to be the same thing for Linux as well. If you want to get into Linux, then you can play it there. And, you know, this is just such a good thing, because so many people use different operating systems. And there was a time when I was playing just source-based games, and if I would have had this on OS X way back then, that would have been great. And I know there are people who are in the same boat on Linux and would just love to have this thing. So I'm definitely looking forward to this. And it's a great move for Valve to make. And when they say source, they say Left 4 Dead 2 will be first, and then all the other source games will follow. just like happened with OS10, TF2 was first, and everything else followed there.
Alrighty.
You know, computer TF2 nerds are one big earbuds. Happy family. Mm-hmm. TF2 people got earbuds. Maybe they'll get like a Linux Penguin pin. Or a Linux Penguin mask.
Okie dokie then.
Google Drive. Just when I needed another cloud storage mechanism. I got them coming out of my ears. Yes. But I don't need it. I was being sarcastic. I said that's why I have them coming out of my ears. I've got iCloud for my little iOS apps and Mac apps. I've got Dropbox for sharing files with people. And now I've got Google Drive. So I don't need a third one. But it's interesting nonetheless. They call it like the Loch Ness Monster. People say there's rumors of it, but this time it actually does exist. Essentially what it is, everybody gets 5 gigabytes of storage for free. You can store anything. It's basically a file system. You install the application. No Linux support yet, just Mac, Windows, and Android. iOS is coming. You install the application, and you can access all of your Google Docs files, put files up, you'll be able to access them with the web interface, that whole kind of thing. So it's just a cloud storage thing, really. And its main purpose is to focus around Google sharing and searching. So let's say you're working on a document, you can share it straight away to Google+. Say you want to share it with some other people, you can just email it off using Gmail. And they got decent pricing, too. For $2.49 a month, you can get 25 gigabytes of storage. For $4.99 a month, you can get 100 gigabytes. And for $49.99 a month, you can get 1 terabyte. And then they say when you upgrade to a paid account, your Gmail account will also expand to 25 gigabytes. So Google is progressing heavy on the cloud front. And this is a good thing because, you know, Chrome OS before really had no file system aside from the file systems that would be provided in the cloud. So this is a much needed add-on for Google Chrome OS and whatnot. Will I use it? I don't think so. I've already got Dropbox for syncing files between all my devices and stuff, and Dropbox works nice as a very good iOS file system, so we'll have to wait to see what the Google Drive application on iOS looks like before I make any decisions about which one I'll use. But most likely continue to use Dropbox, I think. Could use Google Drive, but we'll just have to wait to see what they offer there. All right.
Maybe Apple should join into this.
Well, they got iCloud, but it's different in that you can't access the file system. The main thing with iCloud is that it's on a per-app basis, so that, for instance, when you download a certain application, like I have this text editor application on my phone and on my computer, they both share to the same iCloud storage, so if I want to just use iCloud, I can do that. But the thing is that both apps can already write to Dropbox, so it's not like I need iCloud for that. Dropbox just works so nicely with iOS.
All right, so are you done with this one?
Yep.
All right, and last but not least, 7 Xbox 720 release date rumors, graphics and specification news.
Yeah, typically I don't like discussing rumors and tech news. But I felt this has been creeping around for a while that we might as well at least give it a mention and show people that, you know, the Xbox 720 is not going to be all that great. First things first, based on hardware development cycles, aiming towards a 2015 launch, which, you know, is still 3 years away, and the original Xbox came out in 2005. So this brings up the whole thing once again of, you know, of the sick nature of console gaming in that the console gaming marketplace holds back the PC gaming marketplace because they're using these 10-year-old consoles that are what every game developer is writing for. Therefore, the PC can't advance as fast as it used to be. Anyways, that's just a short rant. You can probably find something like that on RSBNB Informer somewhere if you're more interested in that. But in any case, the graphics for the Xbox 720 will supposedly support a Radeon HD 6670, which supports DirectX 11 and 3D support at 1080p. Now, for anybody who is up on recent hardware, will know that the Radeon 6670 is already a year and a half old. That's right. They're talking about using technology that's already a year and a half old as of 2012 for an Xbox 720. And, you know, this is just the thing with consoles. They're built for this, and they're built around this certain set of hardware that they're able to tweak and squeeze performance out of, but the technology is so old that we're not going to see much movement in the console space until 2025 if this is the case. So really, I mean, if you buy a gaming computer now, you're probably set for the next 5 years. I mean,
mine's been set for the past 5.
Exactly.
7 years, actually.
It's just sad that we're at the mercy of console developers using this old hardware, holding back the PC graphics, when in the 1990s, the PC graphics were the ones that were ahead. But, anyways, I'm still ranting about that. But, any case, it's not... That's supposedly what's going to be happening with the 720. Another rumor with the 720 is that there's not going to be any disc support. Everything will be download-based. What do you think of that?
I hate that.
I think that's a good thing, because what if a disc gets scratched?
So? If you just take care of your video games, they never get scratched anyway.
And you just download them as on demand, just like you do with Steam. I don't know. I'm past the point of wanting physical copies for games.
Really? I like my physical copies.
Why? So you can copy them and give them out to other people?
No. I just like the artwork, man. What's wrong with having a box?
Well, you
support your local retailer.
Yeah, I guess that's true that the local retailers might be feeling some pain from this, but still. I don't know.
Based on
this, we're still a couple of years away, but not looking that great at this point.
And also, keep in mind, Shane, they're not going to pass on the savings to us anyway.
Exactly.
Unless they actually...
The games are still going to be $50, $60 a pop.
And so, you know, unless they're going to pass the savings on to us, there's really no point in... There's no difference to me if I go digital or physical copy.
Yeah,
you're still going to pay the same amount.
DVDs are so cheap now, it doesn't make sense. Like, it's been quite clear for a while that we're not paying for the DVD, the case, and the shipping. We're paying for the actual content and the rights that come with it. So, anyways. I hope that everybody listening to this will think twice before purchasing the Xbox 720 and tell your friends about this when it does come out, that it's using hardware from 2011. But we will cross that bridge when we get there. So, that's it for tech news. Skill of the Month update time. Can you handle this, please?
All right. Skill of the Month update. So, let's see. Click on this thingy. And it's loading. And it's still loading. And there we go. In the lead right now is Marketing 22. Who has gained over 4.7 million XP. Second place is Adiv at 3.5 million XP. So, and third is The Line 777 at 1.5 million XP. So, looks like Marmumska just... Whoops. Bye-bye. Looks like Marking just secured the lead. So, we have only a couple of days left. So,
where'd you get Marmumska from?
I just saw M and my brain just switched to him. Isn't that sad?
Okay.
I'm worried about Mumska sometime. And so it looks like Marking just secured the lead unless Adiv can get like a million XP within the next 48 hours.
Well, Adiv is in the chat right now. So Adiv, I hope you're listening here and please pull off an upset, because we don't like it when these skill of the months go stagnant. So, and it's also worth noting that the skill of the month for May is Dungeoneering. So for anybody out there who's listening and you're interested in Dungeoneering, you can sign up for the Dungeoneering skill of the month. I don't. We've had a Dungeoneering skill of the month once before, I think, and that was on the first month that it came out. So definitely should be interesting.
Alrighty.
So this week was an RSBNB update focus, and we need your ideas about what you would like to see on future focus episodes. I know Trekkie and I are working on a few possibilities, but we'd like to hear your ideas as well. So if you have any ideas, you can just fill out the form on the RSBNB update website at update.rsbnb.com, and then on the left you should see focus ideas, and just click that link and fill out the form and give us all the information we need to make a successful RSBNB update focus. Because focus episodes are really fun, because we get to go in depth with someone and provide a bit more knowledge to the RS community, like we did for our first one at the Fight Kiln, and second one that we did with Uncle Dano for our Living Rock Caverns, and then of course the one that you just heard now with farming. So please do provide us with some ideas for that. Okay, achievements of the week. We just got one this week. That's Marking 22 with 99 defense on April 22nd, so congratulations to you, Marking.
Alrighty. Way to go. So, Shane, do you have a pick for us this week?
Do you have a pick?
I said in the beginning of that I did not.
Okay, well, I was just wondering if any kind of pick materialized since then, but if it didn't, I have something that I can use, but... it's a little bit rough on the edges. Depends how you manage your email. So it'll all depend on whether or not you feel like you need push notifications or not. But, it's a mail client for iOS. It's called Sparrow. They actually have one for OS X as well. The OS X client works better than the iOS client. The main issue with the iOS client being that it does not have support for push notifications, meaning that you do need to open the application up to receive new mail. But that's not really that big of an issue, because you can just keep the original mail application set up for your push notifications if you use push mail. And then just pop Sparrow up when it says you get a new message. But it's essentially a new way of doing an email client for iOS. And the whole point behind it being is that it's focused entirely on Gmail and other IMAP accounts, though the focus is on Gmail. Like, for example, it's got native support for labels, native support for Gmail-style conversations. It makes attachments manageable. It treats attachments as though they're a citizen of the 21st century rather than of the late 1990s. So it just makes emails more modern and more friendly. So definitely check it out. They don't have an Android version, because there is sole Mac application developer. So this is for iOS, iPod Touch. Then if you like what you see and you use OS X, you can get it for the Mac. And that is what I use actually on OS X for my mail client. And, you know, part of the whole reason that Sparrow for iPhone exists is because Gmail did not give us a native Gmail client for iPhone. Which is something the Android people have. Anyways, that's Sparrow. Emphasis being, of course, on the iOS version. Do you have something to add?
No, not really. I was just going to say the next part.
Okay.
So, you guys want to go first?
Well, no, it's just toying with gambling. It's my Informer article that I wrote this week. For those of you who are not aware, sometime in the last week and a half or so, Jagex added a $50 and $100 option for purchasing spins on the Squeal of Fortune. which in my view is completely out of line. It's absurd. It's pretty much gambling. There's no point to having this in the game when Squeal of Fortune is almost gambling, even though it's not. It's just kind of, I guess you could say, disgusting, if you want to put it bluntly. The fact you could spend $50 or $100 for 250 spins, that somebody would spend that much on gambling in game when there's no age gate on this. And that's the main point of this, is that there needs to be an age gate on buying spins for Squeal of Fortune. If there was an age gate, I would have no problem with this, because people are free to spend their money how they want, in my view. $5, $10, $20, that's fine, but $50 and $100 is just pushing it. So definitely take a read through this on Informer and see if you agree with me or not. But let's just be clear here that I do like the idea of Squeal of Fortune. It's just that I think there needs to be an age restriction on this.
And for $100, that's not little cash. That's a lot of money.
Exactly. That's the whole reason why I feel there should be an age restriction on it. Because $100 for something chance-based?
It's not even chance anymore. It's just a not good drop.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. Take a read through this. I'm not saying you need to agree with this, but it's just my opinion on the extra spins for Squeal of Fortune. It just needs an H gate. That's all. So, what have you been up to this week?
I did a little bit of slaying because I needed to get that stuff done. Spent some time in the Citadel and toy with Dungeoneering for a little bit. Didn't do much on Dungeoneering. Just did my C1s and do that thing this morning. Did a saga this morning.
Okay. As for me, this week, I have been primarily camping down at the Waterfins for Crimson Charms. I'm about halfway to the charms I need for level 88 summoning, so that's what I've been up to primarily. Drew a couple of herb farming runs in along the way, and yeah, that's pretty much it for me this week. So I think we're done, unless you have anything else that you want to mention.
We're hoping that Rune Span next week will be spectacular, and we hope it will knock the socks off of everybody.
And hope it'll be a decent training method.
Yes.
All right.
And, that's it.
All right. So with that being said, it's been RSBNB Update 358 after the somewhat anticlimactic surprise on Saturday. And read my article about toying with gambling in RS. Thank you, everyone.
All right. Bye-bye.